This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Happy Darwin Day. Charles Darwin knew there was no hell, but he called it, in a famous pun, a damnable doctrine. Sunday is the 203rd anniversary of the birth of science giant Charles Darwin, who has helped civilization evolve beyond belief. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcoming you to Free Thought Radio, the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics. And we are a diligent state church watchdog.
And I'm Dan Barker, your co-host, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is, as Annie Laurie told you, the weekend of February 11th and 12th. February 12th was Darwin's birthday, 2012. Free Thought Radio is broadcasting here in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in several cities. And hello to all you podcast listeners. On the second half of today's show, our interview portion, we're going to talk with a legal giant, Ellery Shemp, who is now a retired scientist and who, when he was a high school student, was the catalyst for the famous Shemp versus Abington 1962 Supreme Court decision, which ruled that Bible reading and prayers in our public schools are unconstitutional. So we're looking forward to having Ellery back on the show. And he's remained active in supporting high school state church litigant Jessica Ahlquist, whom we've talked about on the last two shows, of Rhode Island.
So we're going to be talking with Ellery a little bit about that brouhaha in Rhode Island. And now we have a lot of news. Some of it is good. Some of it is not so good. And of course, we're delighted to see the Ninth Circuit ruling this week by Stephen Reinhardt of the Ninth Circuit overturning Prop 8. And I just want to remind people that Stephen Reinhardt was one of the judges who formulated a wonderful decision, ruled in favor of Michael Newdow about a decade ago, that under God and the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional. Very thoughtful judge. And to remind listeners that, of course, the only critics, the only organized lobby against marriage equality, the people who propped up Prop 8, is the religious lobby. The Mormons, the Catholics, the evangelicals are the only ones who want to deny marriage equality, and they are doing that on the basis of the Bible, on the basis of God says so, on faith. And that doesn't belong in our laws. So that was a very welcome decision.
So Prop 8 is unconstitutional, whether or not you propagate. That's my own little joke. But for some better humor than that, let's listen to an excerpt from Bill Maher, his last week's show on HBO TV, Real Time with Bill Maher, talking about why atheism is not a religion.
Finally, new rule, until someone claims to see Christopher Hitchens' face in a tree stump, idiots must stop claiming that atheism is a religion. There's one little difference. Religion is defined as the belief in and worship of a superhuman controlling power, and atheism is precisely not that. Got it? Atheism is a religion like abstinence is a sex position. But when it comes to religion, we're not two sides of the same coin, and you don't get to put your unreason up on the same shelf with my reason. Your stuff has to go over there on the shelf with Zeus and Thor and the Kraken. If you still insist atheism is a religion, then it's only fair that we get to do all the loony stuff that you get to do. And I'm going to start tonight by unbaptizing Mitt Romney's dead father-in-law. It was discovered last week that Edward Davies, Ann Romney's father, an enthusiastically anti-religious scientist who called organized faith hogwash, was posthumously baptized in the Mormon tradition 14 months after he died. They tried to do it sooner, but he wouldn't stop spinning in his grave.
Cute line. Now then, he put on a magician's hat and did this fake. He called it the first debaptism in history. Of course, Bill Maher doesn't know. There's been a lot of debaptisms in the Freethought community, and we even have a debaptism certificate at FFRF.org.
If you want, you can obtain your own copy of an official debaptismal certificate. If you were baptized as a child or whenever, and you want to get unbaptized, go to FFRF.org. /something. You can look at
Well, you can find, you can buy it or you can download it under shop.
And if you want to want an official one, it'll be embossed with our official seal and my signature as a currently ordained minister who no longer believes. Here's another entertainer who was not so entertaining. He made a comment about atheism. Denzel Washington. Here's a little excerpt of his interview on the Today Show earlier this week when he was talking about his new movie, Safe House, in which he plays this sort of amoral character, sociopathic character, and he had to learn how to act like a sociopath.
Actually, I read this book called The Sociopath Next Door, and that was like my Bible that I related to. The traits of a sociopath, no conscience, no sense of remorse, usually atheist, just always want to win, want to dominate.
Usually atheist, he said. I read that book, The Sociopath Next Door, and it's actually a very good book by Martha Stout is her name. I don't recall any mention of atheism in that. If she had mentioned it, I would have seen and underlined that part. So I don't know where he's getting his idea that most sociopaths are atheistic.
But what a defamation. And, you know, he's been one of my favorite actors. What a disappointment. He always gives credit to God when he gets an award, but he should be apologizing about that comment. Now, we always parse the National Prayer Breakfast remarks of the current seated president, and we are, regardless of party, we like to document what they're saying. We're going to do that now with Obama's remarks on last February 2nd to the National Prayer Breakfast, and this is kind of typical of them.
I wake up each morning and I say a brief prayer, and I spend a little time in scripture and devotion.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you.
So we couldn't help but think about that song, Burt Bacharach's song. So then here's a bunch of other little comments.
Chance to step back for us to come together as brothers and sisters and seek God's face together. But these moments of prayer slow us down. They humble us. They remind us that no matter how much responsibility we have, how fancy our titles, how much power we think we hold, we are imperfect vessels. We can all benefit from turning to our Creator, listening to Him, avoiding phony religiosity, and listening to Him.
God is a him. Phony religiosity?
I thought all religiosity
remark.
Was phony.
But, you know, I'm an imperfect vessel. I'm a sinner. Only God is perfect. The kind of the false modesty.
That's the way politicians need to talk,
right?
Isn't it?
Now, here's the part that really bugged me.
Since we've expanded and strengthened the White House faith-based initiative.
So he went out of his way to say he's expanded Bush's faith-based initiative, and I was very disappointed because he made it sound like Catholic Charities has never gotten money before this, and they used to have to separate out their religious from their secular, have a secular arm, have separate bookkeeping, take the crosses down. The Bush initiative really has destroyed a lot of that line between church and state, but religion has always gotten the credit, but the taxpayers have gotten the bill.
And Obama could have done away with that, like he hinted when he was campaigning way back.
But then actually he campaigned and
he
said
again. He changed his mind on it.
There was no surprise there.
It was a real long speech that he gave at the prayer breakfast, and he ended it like this.
I have fallen on my knees with great regularity since that moment, asking God for guidance, not just in my personal life and my Christian walk, but in the life of this nation and in the values that hold us together and keep us strong. I know that he will guide us. He always has, and he always will.
Well,
we didn't elect him to be our pastor in chief, did we?
No, and this is almost like a litmus test that he really probably had to go there and make all of these personal utterances about his religious faith. And yet we have a constitution that says there is no religious test for public office. And what a pity it is to see that politicians have to pander. But
so how does Romney call that there, an assault on religion?
Well, there was a little meat that he threw, or if you're a vegetarian, a little protein that he threw us non-believers in a few spots, such as this one.
You know, the part of living in a pluralistic society means that our personal religious beliefs alone can't dictate our response to every challenge we face, but...
So that's something. And now where it matters, we did see an excellent decision come down from the Obama administration on January 20th. And that was the ruling by Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius, long awaited, that employers who offer birth control, other institutions that offer birth health care coverage may not deny women birth control. There can't be a copay. It's a long-awaited, necessary reform, and the Catholic Church is in conniptions over it.
Right now, we are seeing the Roman Catholic bishops in America gunning against the Obama administration's new rule that health insurance policies must cover contraception without a copay. They're mobilizing their 24% of the population that are Catholic with letters read from church pulpits on Sunday urging parishioners to take action, to contact members of Congress, and condemning this very sensible decision as a striking blow at liberty.
And it isn't a blow against religious liberty, because churches, and including the Catholic, are explicitly exempted from this rule. They do not have to offer birth control coverage, or any employer who's explicitly focused on offering a religious message is exempted from this rule. But what is included are religious institutions such as, you know, often quasi-religious institutions such as hospitals, schools, universities that get huge infusions of public funding. Students go there with Pell Grants and so on. And if you're a student, for example, at Fordham University in New York, and you want birth control and you go to student healthcare, you don't get it. If you're a rape victim and the only Catholic, the only hospital in your community is Catholic, you may not get the morning after pill. If you're a working class woman and you are paying a premium to your employer to help cover your health benefits, you are being double billed if you want birth control pills, maybe shelling out as much as $100 a month. So this is very, very wrong. The United States stands alone in not ensuring that women get this kind of coverage. We're basically reproductive rights paupers in the United States, thanks to the arm of the Catholic Church. So it's terribly important. We don't know what's going to happen, that Obama be thanked for handing down this rule and not letting the Catholic Church blow out the lights of the Enlightenment, which they would like to do in their worldwide quest to deny all women birth control and abortion, regardless if they're Catholic or not. And they can't even get their own women to listen to them. 98% of Catholic women have used contraception at some time or other. So this is very wrong.
I think I read in the New York Times today that actually most Catholics in America do agree with Obama on this. We'll have to see what kind of pressure the priests can put on the population. But it's not just the Catholic Church. Listen to what the GOP frontrunner Mitt Romney said about Obama's decision.
Remarkably, under this president's administration, there is an assault on religion.
And, well, there is no assault on religion. There is an assault on women's rights. And we're listening to what? Say a Little Prayer. I'm Annie Laurie Giller.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the great success of the Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon. And after that, we'll talk with Ellery Shemp.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio,
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller. We're co-directors of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and we hope someday you'll join us at FFRF.org. Now, in honor of the Book of Mormon that this week became the top grossing show on Broadway for a single week for the first time, we want to play a little bit from the Book of Mormon. It had won 9 Tony Awards. Unfortunately, Andrew Rangel did not get the Best Actor Award, but here he is.
He should have.
This inimitable I Believe.
I believe that the Lord God created the universe. I believe that he sent his only son to die for my sins. And I believe that ancient Jews built boats and sailed to America. I am a Mormon, and a Mormon just believes. You cannot just believe partway. You have to believe in it all. My problem was doubting the Lord's will instead of standing tall. I can't allow myself to have any doubt. It's time to set my worries free. Time to show the world what Elder Price is about and share the power inside of me. This is the moment I was born to do, and I feel so incredible to be sharing my faith with you. The scriptures say that if you ask in faith, if you ask God himself, he'll know. But you must ask him without any doubt, and let your spirit grow.
Let your spirit grow.
No, it's all true, you'll just feel it. You'll be a Mormon. By gosh, a Mormon. Just believe.
Just believe. A Mormon. Just believe.
I believe.
Just believe. A Mormon. Just
I believe.
And that was Andrew Rangel singing, I Believe, from the hit Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon. And dang it, I don't believe.
And I'm Annie Laurie Geller, and I believe we'll be right back to talk with champion of the First Amendment, Ellery Shemp.
And that music is from the Spooky Mormon Hell from that musical.
We'll be right back. Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And our guest today is living proof that not only is there life after high school, but there is life, a very rich life, after being a high school litigant in a famous Supreme Court state church separation lawsuit.
We have on the phone with us Ellery Shemp, who was the primary catalyst in Abington versus Shemp. And I think we misspoke. It's a decision that came down in 63, not 62, by the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're going to let Ellery talk about that case. But I wanted to let you know that he is a distinguished retired scientist. He attended Tufts. He graduated cum laude in physics and geology, earned a Ph.D. at Brown in physics, worked on fiber optics research, joined the staff of Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and worked on the development of MRIs. And he's a member of the American Physical Society, author of many articles in professional journals, a wide traveler. He's a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and was belatedly named a champion of the First Amendment by FFRF in 2007. And Professor Stephen Solomon of New York University has documented the landmark case in a book called Ellery's Fight that was published by University of Michigan Press in 2007. And Ellery is a very accomplished speaker, talks to students a lot, and you've been following Ellery. Welcome to the show.
Well, Andy and Dan, it's wonderful to be talking to you again. I might say that, and thank you for that nice introduction, the name of Stephen Solomon's book is called Ellery's Protest.
Ellery's Protest. Fight. I'm sorry, got that, correct that.
So are you going to explain why we were prompted to talk to him this week?
Well, we know that you've been following the situation with Jessica Ahlquist in Rhode Island with some concern and have even driven to Rhode Island from. Are you in Boston now?
Yes, I am, yes.
So we thought it was time to remind people about why we don't want prayer in school and to talk about your case and also your involvement with Jessica.
Well, Jessica is a wonderfully courageous young woman. You know, what's going on in Cranston, Rhode Island, it's a suburb of Providence, Rhode Island, is really quite terrible with the hate that's been lodged against her. So she's needs support, and I'm very happy to be able to give her whatever support I can.
Because you remember that. You went through that yourself way back in the 60s.
Way back. I mean, there were still dinosaurs at that time. And this was in 1956 that I was living in Abington, Pennsylvania. It's a suburb of Philadelphia. And they had a practice there of Bible readings every morning and recitation of the Lord's Prayer. And I thought, this really doesn't square with the First Amendment, establishment of religion and free exercise of religion. And so I made a protest, and with the help of the ACLU, it eventually reached the Supreme Court. And as you mentioned, it was decided in 1963 that these practices of prayers organized by the school authorities were unconstitutional and a violation of our very fundamental ideas that are incorporated in the Constitution.
Now, you were 16 when you first started protesting prayer at the Abington High School, right?
I was, yes.
And what did you do?
I relate to Jessica, although I didn't suffer nearly as much from bad reactions like she has. You know, nonetheless, it was a big event for our family, and my brother and sister, who are younger than me, they did suffer. I sort of escaped and went to college, Roger and Donna had to put up with the reactions of the community.
Now, why don't you remind us what the Pennsylvania law then required? What were you having to sit and listen to or participate in?
The Pennsylvania law at that time required that in every school classroom in the entire state of Pennsylvania at the beginning of each school day, 10 verses of the Holy Bible had to be read at the beginning. And, you know, in the early grades, of course, the teacher read it, but in later grades, it was turned around to students who were required to read it in rotation. So we began every day with 10 verses of the Bible, usually read rather badly, and usually the kid would forget when it was his turn. So you would just open the book, the Bible at random, and start reading. And stumble.
Gee, that's a little dangerous.
And then everybody stood up to say the Lord's Prayer.
Then you'd have to stand up and recite in unison the Lord's Prayer.
That was required, yes.
And then I think that was followed by a flag salute, so that kind of tied
the
whole...
And then the flag, yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And so...
Which, interestingly enough, only added the phrase, under God, in 1954. I mean, none of our founding fathers ever said the pledge, because it was only written in 1896, and for the first 70 or 80 years, nobody have ever said the phrase under God either, and the country didn't collapse as a result of that.
Now, when you were a student and you first, you know, you really were the catalyst, what did you do to protest this?
Oh, I just wanted to show that the Bible was not the only holy scripture according to different faith traditions. So I borrowed a copy of the Koran because it was available in one of my friend's father's library. And at that time, I knew nothing whatsoever about Islam, and nobody else did either, or did they care. And it could have just as well have been some book from Hindu scriptures or Buddhist scriptures, but that's the one I had.
And so then,
but I wanted to show that the Bible was not unique, that there were other books that were highly revered as, quote, holy scriptures, and the Bible was not unique.
Oh, so you showed up with the Quran, and then what happened?
Well, I sat in my classroom. You know, this was in what you call homeroom, I just opened. The requirement was that you put away all of your other book work, didn't do algebra homework or something while during the Bible reading. So you're supposed to sit there and listen very attentively. And I deliberately opened the Koran and read it quietly to myself. I didn't make any noise. But I did not stand up for the Lord's Prayer. And that's what got the teacher's attention. And so after some brief discussion, the teacher sent me to the principal. And the principal was extremely confused because I had been a good student. And this didn't fit with his ideas of what a rotten apple in the barrel. And later called me, and so he sent me to the guidance counselor, and the guidance counselor was equally confused, that's what happened. And then I came home from school, and over dinner I talked to my folks, and my parents suggested that I write to the American Civil Liberties Union, which I did, and in the course of time the ACLU decided to that this was a substantial constitutional issue, and gave us tremendous help in the legal processes.
Now, there seems to be a pattern here because Jessica Ahlquist, like you, is also a very bright, very capable, good student in the school, and she's the one raising this issue.
Well, I mean, she's been thoughtful about this. She has convictions as a non-believer, mm-hmm. and she saw this rather prominently displayed prayer banner, as it's called. And she, too, was able to read the First Amendment. It's only 45 words long, and so anybody can read it. And she said, this is an imposition on my non-belief, and she was entirely right.
Did you know...
And the judge, Legault, in Rhode Island, a federal judge, wrote a very, very good decision based upon 75 years
yeah.
of decisions like this. You know, we have the McCollum, Engel, Abington, Lee, Minor, Barnett, a whole
Weissman.
Lot.
And Weissman, yeah.
Which came out of Rhode Island.
Yeah, Lee versus
yeah.
Weissman, yeah.
But my point, I think, is that these 75 years of similar decisions about school prayers and the use of school authority to impose a religious viewpoint on impressionable children, this is not a novel idea at all. It's part of a long tradition. And the prayer banner is clearly a prayer. I mean, it says it's a prayer. And it begins, Our Heavenly Father. You know, and I mentioned the Engel case that was 1962 about prayers in New York schools. And one of the wonderful sentences from that decision was that it is no part of the business of government to be composing prayers or selecting prayers. And the vitalizing idea is, what is the business of government? Surely it's about providing solid education and not anything about prayers. So the poster says it's a prayer. Prayer is a religious notion, and it has no secular purpose whatsoever.
And very clearly, all the supporters regard it as a prayer. I mean, the religious fanatics have come out of the closet. Now, I know that you and your family did get some vituperation. I mean, I think I remember you saying of about 5,000 letters that you got in those days, about a third of
yes,
them were hateful.
Good memory.
Yeah.
Yes.
But of course, now with social network and the internet, it's just so much easier to have these huge campaigns.
Well, there's the sexist angle too. I mean, going after a young girl, some of the language that she's been reading, is you can't even say it on the radio. You can't even read it. It's horrible, the things some of these Christians wish would happen to her.
Yes, well, we got similar letters. About one-third of the 5,000 letters were really very, very nasty. I mean, some of them were actually smeared with excrement. And,
that's pretty nasty.
That was pretty nasty. And children on the school bus that came by our house would roll down their windows and say, "Now passing the commie camp." My brother Rogers really was pushed around and physically assaulted on several occasions. My sister Donna, well, several of her friends were mothers said that their daughters couldn't play with Donna or meet with her. Donna felt genuinely mortified by the whole thing and wasn't entirely sure whether this was a good idea for the Shemp family, but she was a good camper.
Well, so, I mean, all of this shows why religion does not belong in our public schools, how divisive, how it can even engender violence.
Again and again, you know, removing this prayer doesn't remove anybody's freedom. Kids have all the opportunity in the world to pray at home, to pray on driving to school. Well, hardly anybody walks to school anymore, I'm sorry to say. But and you can sit there in school and close your eyes for 20 seconds and offer up a prayer before your exam if you wish.
Well, that's that old joke.
What's that?
You're probably going to say that old joke that as long as there's tests, there will be prayer in schools.
Exactly. Although, you know, I was a former professor, and I've always said that doing the homework is better preparation than prayer.
Well, we are talking with Ellery Shemp about being part of a landmark case about getting prayer out of our public schools, sort of in the context of the current fight in Rhode Island with Jessica Alkest. And when we come back, Ellery, I want to talk a little bit more about what you've been doing, your going to the school board and so on in Rhode Island. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for the final segment of Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking with the distinguished Ellery Shemp. And Ellery, when I was talking to you, inviting you on this show a couple days ago, I joked with you that I'm calling you and Jim McCollum Jessica Alquist's guardian non-angels, looking over her case.
I'm very happy to try to be supportive to Jessica. I can relate to her, and she's a lovely young woman. And, you know, what she's had to put up with in, you know, she now has policemen protecting her as she walks around in the school. Well, that, you know, just brings more attention on her and more opprobrium, more hate and fear. So it's just a nasty situation.
It is she's a nasty situation. There was supposed to be a public comment period at a school board meeting several weeks ago, and I know you drove all the way from Boston to go and give your perspective as someone who's been through this. Why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, it's only 60 miles from Boston to Providence, but you know, it was a nice time to meet with Jessica. I had met her before, but I wanted to show her my support. And there was a nice turnout of maybe 30, 40 people who were supporting Jessica, and there was about an equal number, 40, 50, who thought the school committee should launch an appeal of the judge's decision. I was going to testify, but they didn't allow it. But, I was going to testify that this would be extremely foolish, that the appeal will certainly be lost based upon 75 years of previous court history, and all it will do is waste the taxpayers' money. And but now this has been rescheduled for February 16th, and I'm planning to be there. And incidentally, I met with Debbie Weissman of Lee versus Weissman, who I had not met before.
Oh.
And her father does a radio interview show in Rhode Island, And so I'm going to be participating in that earlier in the afternoon.
That case was 1992, yeah. 20 years ago.
We met the family. They were Freethinkers of the Year at a San Antonio FFRF convention, and I didn't realize
I remember that
Daniel has a radio show, and I'm so glad he's going to have you on it. It'll be like old home week.
So how much?
Oh, it was delightful to meet Debbie. She's a wonderful young woman, too.
Mm-hmm. And she was a high schooler also, like 16 or 17, when this decision was won.
Right.
So, she's been
and
through
I'm
it.
Going to point out, I mean, there were a lot of banners from the opposition about misquoting the First Amendment, saying freedom from religion is not valid. And I'm going to point out to them that that is entirely wrong, that the whole idea of freedom of religion includes freedom from religion. And it's very interesting. I mean, here, Rhode Island was founded by Roger Williams, mm-hmm. who was forced out of the Puritan colony here in Massachusetts because he wanted more freedom of religion and freedom from their kind of religion. It's also interesting that Roger Williams is probably the originator of the concept of a wall of separation between church and state. He, in one of his sermons and writings, he talked about a garden wall in which the state was on one side and it was beautiful, and the and religion was on the other side and it was beautiful, and that was apparently the concept that Thomas Jefferson picked up and turned into the famous phrase "wall of separation." Mm-hmm. I also like to point out that the people who quote the Declaration of Independence simply do not understand that this has no legal basis whatsoever. The Declaration of Independence is not part of the Constitution, not part of our laws. It's never been referred to as a basis for any legal decision. It's poetic language, and it was important at the time, of course, but it's not part of the laws of the United States. And the other thing I always like to point out, that when we read our Constitution, the Constitution never once mentions Christianity or God or a Bible or commandments. It's simply not written in the Constitution. And the Bible, in contrast, never once mentions freedom of religion. The Bible never once mentions freedom of speech. The Bible never once mentions anything about elections and democracy or any of the things that we hold dear as part of our history and traditions. And
or human rights, even. Any
or
of
even
that.
Human rights. Yeah, I mean, the Bible promotes slavery, or accepts it at the very least.
For women,
and
yeah.
There's great horrible things that are done against people who are not believers in the God of Moses, or whoever that was.
Now, speaking of the Bible, and it's also true that during the Constitutional Convention, the Bible was not even referred to at that time. But your case was in Pennsylvania. You probably just caught the news that last month the Pennsylvania legislature passed a resolution.
Well, the House.
The House passed a resolution declaring 2012 to be the year of the Bible. Not only
right.
that.
It might have been the Senate. I can't remember. It was just one branch.
Yeah,
it hasn't passed both.
But in the resolution, they called the Bible the Word of God. And what would Muslims think about that in the state of Pennsylvania?
Well, that's exactly the right point, Dan. I mean, I was appalled when I read this. At the, you know, here. Pennsylvania has actually had more than its fair share of court decisions. You know, there's the Allegheny versus about nativity.
I think Lemon
case.
Alton Lemon, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Pennsylvania?
Lemon, yeah, all came from Pennsylvania. And here they declare, you know, the Bible, this to be the year of the Bible. I mean, what nonsense. I mean, this is pandering. This is public display of piety for political purposes. Pandering. And it's totally in opposition, actually, if people read the Bible in Matthew 6, as you well know it, Dan, which suggests that prayer should be in private and not make public displays of all this stuff.
I was on a radio show with one of the sponsors of the bill. Saccone was his name in Pennsylvania. And he said it's okay to acknowledge the history of Christianity and the Bible in our country. And I said, well, what about all the contributions made by atheists to our country, like Elizabeth Cady Stanton? And he said on the air, atheists have not made a significant contribution to the United States of America.
Yeah, this is a terrible thing that atheists have such hatred against them. But I think things are changing. I mean, I think now very respected polls, like from Pew, show that something like 14-17% of Americans now consider themselves non-believers. And I know that on college campuses, as many as one-third of entering freshmen now put down none or no religion for their preferences.
But things could change a little faster in the state of Rhode Island.
And you've been you've been talking on some of those college campuses as well, haven't you?
I have, and although the secular students represent relatively small turnouts, I think that for every atheist who comes out of the closet is has maybe 10 people standing behind her, him or her.
Well, thank you so much, Ellery, for everything you've done. And you can get Ellery's Protest, the book, from FFRF's website, fffrf.org, and learn more about his case.
Ellery's Protest.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellery.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you, and I thank Freedom From Religion Foundation for all the good work you do.
Thank you. And thank you, Dave McCann, for producing and engineering the show, which is produced here in Madison, Wisconsin. To hear past shows or sign up for the archive or for the podcast, go to ffrf.org/radio.
Join us at ffrf.org or ask for a complimentary issue of the January-February newspaper at 1-800-335-4021. If you're a member, you can get our news releases and action alerts and read a lot more about the things that we just have a little moment to talk about on this weekly program. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Nothing fails like prayer.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.